Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. I'm Bob Grove, your host. Tonight, we're discussing racial inequities in our local criminal legal systems. We're joined tonight by Mark Dupree of the Wyandotte County District Attorney, Akai Johnson, and Maria Starsman of the Vera Institute of Justice. Welcome. So happy to have you here. Talk a little bit about the Vera Institute of Justice. Your mission statement is to drive change, to urgently build and improve justice systems that ensure fairness, promote safety, and strengthen communities. I understand that you achieve your mission by tackling the causes and consequences of mass incarceration, racial disparities, and the loss of public trust in law enforcement. Can you tell us more about the Vera Institute?
Yeah, sure. I can start with that one, Bob. Thanks for having us. So I think the best way to describe what we do is really to tell the origin story of our institute and our work. So in the early 60s, there were two gentlemen in New York who were very concerned about how bail was impacting poor people in their communities. And so they decided to start gathering data about who was getting bail, what were they getting bail for, how much it was, how long they were staying in jail until they could pay. They gathered all that data, and then they started sharing it with system stakeholders. So judges, mayors, police officers, other folks who were in position to make decisions that were driving these issues. And they were able to drive serious change. New York started restructuring its bail laws. There was a commission and a full report that came out of that research. And they thought, you know, this is a great idea. A lot of times people who are involved in the system don't have a chance to step back and really see the impact of their decisions, and certainly not necessarily with a lot of data to inform those decisions. And so they decided to start an institute that would do just that. They named it after one of their mothers, Vera. And so our institute was born. And really since then, we've been gathering data to help government stakeholders make better informed policy decisions based on data. And in our work in particular, we work with prosecutors around the country who do that. And so our team of 12 folks helps prosecutors like DA Dupree around the country who are interested in addressing mass incarceration, addressing racial disparities, and being more accountable to their communities. And so we help DAs gather data about how their decisions are currently impacting their communities. And then we help them use that data to drive policy changes that are designed to improve safety outcomes with a particular focus on those three things. Ending mass incarceration, addressing racial disparities, and being more accountable, because each one of those things we believe and research supports is necessary to safety, reducing our reliance on who we incarcerate, addressing disparities to help build trust in the system, and then being more transparent and accountable so community members know with some data to see exactly how the system is going.
That's great. Marisi, do you want to add to that?
Sure, I could speak a little bit to the third part that Akai mentioned in terms of supporting communities and being more accountable to communities. And that's something that the type of work that I'm coordinating in Wyandotte County is really focusing on. We really want to do research that centers the voices of community members and elevates the kind of expertise and knowledge that community members have, including their lived experiences with the criminal legal system. So by coming to Wyandotte County, we want to better understand how communities who are impacted by the criminal legal system understand the system, how they understand the role of the prosecutor more specifically. And that's not only for people directly impacted by the system, but also their loved ones, neighborhoods, entire communities who might not necessarily have been exposed to the system themselves, but are impacted or affected nevertheless.
Mark, can you tell us about the DA's office? Give us a little bit of your background there and what the DA's office is doing now, what your initiatives are.
Absolutely. So I was born and raised here in Wyandotte County, Kansas City, Kansas, which is inner city here. And it was growing up here, it was exciting to see the many different components of the criminal justice system. As my parents were pastors, we've seen the good and the bad between family and parishioners. And so it was exciting to ultimately get involved in the criminal justice system in a positive way. And by doing so, having started out as a criminal defense lawyer, then moving on into prosecution, and then ultimately as the elected DA, with that background, my thought process coming into this thing was that a prosecutor's role, right, the chief law enforcement officer, his job should not simply be to lock people up, but instead he or she should focus on both punishment as well as prevention. And that is where the thought process of let's really take a deep dive into what's happening, what has happened, and what can we do to make a difference in our criminal justice system, which ultimately led me to reach out and try to connect with Vera and all of the work that they do. We live in a time where data is so ever important. It is extremely important. And when we're dealing with citizens in our community, some who are involved in the system, some who have no idea on how the system works, they need that evidence. They need data to show them what's happening. The scare tactics of the past and people just taking people's words for it because some politician said it is over. And so with that, digging in and finding out what is the charging process, who are we charging, what are the disparities, what are the problems, is prison really working, should we look at the underlying issues, should we look at mental health, should we look at, you know, all of these addictions, all of these things that we know and that data has shown to be extremely important in educating our community on what those things are. And so in our office, we have done that. We've said, okay, we will continue to charge individuals, but we need to educate not only our citizens, but we need to educate our prosecutors on what is the best practice, what is the best route to do, how should we handle cases? Not only how should we handle cases, but let's take a real, what I call a come to Jesus meeting, a reality check on the disparities in our charging. Are we charging Black, brown, and broke folks at a higher rate than we're charging everyone else when we have literally a third African-American, a third Caucasian, and a third Hispanic in our community? But why is it that African-Americans are being charged double the amount of their population? And why is the prison? So I go on and on and on about these things, but I'm in the system, and so I know that. But Vera in that connection allows us to really make what I know is true palatable and more bite-sized for individuals in the community so that we can get buy-in from them to actually make real change in our criminal justice system.
So you actually reached out to Vera and asked them to come be part of this process.
Yes, I heard great things about them. I continued to run into them or a facet of them at multiple conferences as I was a young pup trying to figure out my way in the prosecutor's world. And I was traveling in conferences in Chicago and Texas and Cali. And I kept hearing this place, Vera, Vera, Vera. And then I found that it wasn't a place. It was an actual institute. I said, I need your help. And so I started making some calls. And thankfully, they said, sure.
So describe this project a little bit, just kind of the overview of what your joint project looks like. And who wants to start? Kai, you want to start with that?
Sure, I can start, and I'll defer to Marcy and Mark on this too. And I should name, because we get this question a lot, so all of our services are free. So we're not charging Wyandotte anything. We're a privately funded nonprofit. We get donations, and that really enables us to do this work. So I do want to be clear. A lot of times we get the question of, well, how much does this cost in the taxpayers in the DOT? And the answer to that is nothing. So I want to name that too. And so the overview of our partnership really touches on what Mark named. He asked us to come and look at how the system in the DOT is impacting brown, black, and broke folks. And so the way that we do that is we try to rely on data. And so we started, we had went pre-COVID times and met with Mark and a lot of folks on his staff to just try to get a sense of how the office works. And then we dig into their case management system. So where all the data is about how they prosecute cases, who they're prosecuting, and try to dig into what the disparities are there, if they exist, and what they look like to help bring that data out in a way that is more palatable. And so people can readily understand it and make decisions based off of it. And then we also have, which I'll pivot to Marisi on, I think the part we're most excited about is the community engagement and collaborative research aspect. So we can get like the hard numbers to say, so for example, I think at least as far as 2018, Black people were 2.3 times more likely to be incarcerated at the jail in Wyandotte than white people. So that's the hard like, quantitative number stat. But then the big question is, well, why is that happening? And for us, the people closest to the problem are closest to the solution. And so that means the people in Wyandotte community members are going to be the ones who have the insight into what's going on. And so our community and collaborative research project, which I'll turn to Reese on now, is really how we're supposed to, and how we're hopeful to get at some of those answers.
Yeah, as I already mentioned, that part of the research, the qualitative research, is really meant to center the voices of communities and the lived experiences that they have with the criminal legal system. And what I would like to stress is that the goal is really to gather narratives from people, but not so much or not in order to provide anecdotal evidence. That's often a mistake that people make when they hear qualitative research. They think that's just stories that people tell us. But really, the point for us is to use those experiences and stories in order to contextualize the quantitative data that we've gathered from the administrative data set that Mark has provided to us. Sometimes anthropologists talk about this as thick description. So it's really substantiating the quantitative data and making sure that qualitative and quantitative data complement each other. And what is also relevant for us that we are very aware doing qualitative research, that research of that nature has a legacy and a very problematic history. So often in the past, researchers would enter communities, extract knowledge, and then leave those communities and share the knowledge that they've gained with their academic colleagues, with other researchers, but they would not necessarily take into consideration what those insights mean for the community. They would also not take into consideration that the community has its own forms of knowledge, skills, and expertise. And we want to change that. We want to foreground the skills and expertise and experiences of the community, and we want to share the power that we hold as researchers with the community. So it's really important for us that the work that we do is collaborative from the beginning. The community members are involved in every stage of the project, that they can make interventions, ask questions, voice criticism if they think anything in this project is not going in the direction that they think is beneficial to the community and sustainable for the community. That's an important part for us too. We don't want to come in, conduct the research and then leave and present the results to Marc Dupré's office. We want the community together with Marc Dupré's office to be able to then take something away from these findings and work on improving the system for the future.
Marc, what's your hopes and expectations of coming into this project? Where do you think it will go and lead to?
Well, I hope, and I have high hopes, that because of this connection and because of this research, we will form a collaborative effort with the community. I think all too often, the citizens of our community, and quite frankly, in this country, not only do we have a shaky past, but when you're dealing with the criminal justice system, specifically when you're dealing with prosecution and disproportionality, you deal with a very rocky history, and you deal with distrust of not simply police, but distrust of the community or the criminal justice system as a whole. And so many citizens, they distrust the criminal justice system. They don't have any faith in our system. But with this, it gives us the ability to say, look, we as the criminal justice system acknowledge that one, we have a faulty past. Two, we have made mistakes. But more importantly, three, moving forward, we need to do this together. We need to work it out together. What is the best, what is the way forward that is in the best interest of the citizens of the community that we serve, as well as the criminal justice system that we're supposed to be working in? And so my hope is that with this collaborative effort and really kind of, for lack of better terms, putting it all out there, right? And saying, hey, this is where we are. It sucks, some of it. We have some high moments, but it sucks. But how do we take this and move forward together and say, now on, this is how the justice system is going to work, and for families in our communities to have hope and to gain trust in that justice is actually going to be done, because we've gotten rid of some of the distaste. We've gotten rid of some of the divisive ways of doing things, and quite frankly, the racism, discrimination, the prejudice, all of these things, we can get rid of it so that we don't have those divisive components systematically in our criminal justice system. And so my hope is that we can get rid of those things and move forward with the community itself to hopefully gain trust between citizens in our community and the criminal justice system as a whole.
Let's look at some of your initial findings. And Kai, you kind of touched on this. 23% of Wyandotte's county population is Black, and yet 41% of cases referred to Mark's office are Black. So, I mean, there's a 1.9 ratio there. And I guess juveniles is even higher. Black juveniles are 2.3 times more likely to be referred to Mark's office. Prison sentences, a Black person is 2.1 times more likely to be sentenced than a white person. And then there's the economic disparities. The poorest 25% averages 69 days in detention waiting for trial. And homeless people is even higher. They have to wait an average of 78 days in pretrial detention. Yet the richest 25% of Wyandotte County averages about 13 days before their trial. What do you think causes this? I mean, do you have a theory of why we see such a disparity of both race and and economic situations?
Yeah, I think Mark touched on this or started to touch on it a little bit earlier as well. But our country just has a history of marginalizing those particular categories of groups and folks in the community. And so frequently the criminal justice system hits them the hardest, whether it's Black and brown neighborhoods that tend to have more police officers. And so they tend to get pulled into the system more. And then there's just the societal factors too. I mean, taking Wyandotte, for example, you have practices like redlining that, you know, for a generation of folks excluded them from a base of home ownership and financial prosperity. And we see that still trickle down now in the disparities, Bob, that you just mentioned. So for me, the way I try to look at it is, why do those things exist, right? So if Black people are more likely to get referred to the system, well, why is that? It's not because Black people are inherently more evil. So in other words, it's not like a nature situation. It's got to be nurture. It's got to be something in our society or policy choices that we're making that make these disparities more likely and start to explain why they exist. And so I think there are some historical things like redlining, neighborhoods that tend to have a higher police presence, systemic factors like generational poverty, lack of educational opportunities, things like that to really start to drive these issues. But in terms of the specifics, to Marisi's point, that's why the community aspect is so important. Because we need to know what the lived experience is from folks in Wyandotte to get a sense of how we can start to address those issues. And then even on the bail piece you mentioned, I think that just speaks to the flaw with cash bail more generally. It tends to be based on who has money versus your guilt or innocence or how dangerous you are to the community. And so when someone sets what I think the median bond in Wyandotte is maybe $20,000, you know, if you're rich, you can get out. But if you don't have money, you stay in. And I don't think anyone thinks the justice system should work that way. And I guess I would end by saying, I think it's Bryan Stevenson who frequently says the opposite of poverty is justice in this country. Like people who don't have money tend not to have access to justice. And so that's why we're excited to partner with the ADPRI and really lean into this community approach to start figuring out some solutions.
Well, it seems kind of ironic that the poorest segment, I mean, you said the average bond's 20,000, but if you look at the richest 25% Wyandotte County, the average bond is 15,000. So the rich people actually end up with lower bonds than the poor people that can't afford them. And I also think it's interesting, I'm looking at some of your stats here, that the average bond for a white adult Wyandotte is 10,000. The average bond for a Black is double that, 20,000. And the average bond for a Latinx adult is 25,000, even more. So we're seeing a lot of issues at play there. Speaking of Latinx, I found it interesting that Wyandotte population, again, 30% of Wyandotte County's population is Latinx, yet we're only seeing 18% of cases being referred to Marks. That's kind of the opposite of the Black community, where we see double referred. you know, with the Latinx, we're seeing a much smaller referral rate. And I'm wondering if that's because the immigration court is stepping in and taking up a lot of those cases. Do you have any thoughts on that, Mark?
Well, you know, my thought is a couple different areas. One, I think that ICE definitely is involved here in Wyandotte County, not as much as in our bigger cities, but we definitely deal with those concerns. And we have a lack of cooperation, sadly, with those types of cases. When we're dealing with Hispanic individuals who are victims of crimes, they're of the mindset, many of them, they don't come in, they don't talk to us because of the possibility of deportation. And many of our commissioners right now are looking at whether or not we should try to fix it. And here's my response to that. Yes, we need to fix it. There should be a conversation on if conversation should be how. And so, again, it goes back to that distrust of the criminal justice system. But I'll also say this, right? I am the first African-American elected district attorney in the state of Kansas, right? This has never happened before in my state. It's definitely never happened before in my county. And thus, it took an African-American DA to take a deep dive into the realities and the disparities that we're dealing with. There has been, in this country, such a horrific past concerning African-Americans in our system that it doesn't pale to anyone, right? Sadly, African-American folks have gotten the tail end of the deal in this country for a long time. And so it doesn't surprise me that Black folks are going to jail more. Black folks are being charged with, you know, that whole thing, slavery and everything, you know, that whole thing. So there's a history in this country that says the disproportionality, it makes sense. Majority of the time, right, for African-Americans, seeing that once African-Americans came out of slavery and came into that place of where you finally get a voice, hold up, we're going to make a whole bunch of laws and say that if you gather together, it's a crime. If you do something, if you speak up, it's a crime. And so it makes sense that you see more Black folks in there. And so, but I do believe that immigration issues still play a part with that. But at the end of the day, I think that the fact is that race and economic status should have no place in the criminal justice system. And sadly, it clearly does. It clearly does. And depending on what end of the spectrum on, it's good or bad. And it's something, because if you're Black and you got some money in this county, you're still going to feel it either way.
Marisa, talk a little bit about where we've got about 2 minutes left. So tell us where your project's going from here, what your research is going to do over the next year.
Yeah, so we have actually already started some of our work by doing outreach and information sessions that we are providing for the community, pretty much providing context and background of our work, similar to what we are sharing here right now. And beginning in the next year, we are hoping to find a number of community members who could become researchers to partner with us on the project and collaboratively carry out the research. Then together, we would move into the actual research stage and conduct interviews and surveys with community members, again, in order to get that kind of narrative evidence and the experiences that people have with the system. And we are really hoping that in the future, we are able to share more of that as we move along. We will probably offer another community information session in January of next year. And for the time being, we've also set up a Facebook group that people can visit to keep abreast of the kind of work that we're doing, of preliminary findings. If they have questions, they can contact us there. So that might be the easiest way to reach us. It's a Facebook group that's called Vera Vico Community. In one word, should be relatively easy to find. And we also have a dedicated email address, vicocommunity@vera.org, that people can use to reach us.
That's very good. And I want to thank all of you for being with us today. So Mark, if people want to learn about the DA's office more, reach out to you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way, excuse me, is you can go to our Facebook page, Wyandotte County District Attorney Facebook page, or you can go to WICO wycoda.org. That's our website address, wycoda.org, WYCODA. And thank you so much for having us. And I treasure Absolutely. My collaboration and partnership with the Vera Institute.
That's wonderful. Akai, what's the best way to reach the Vera Institute if people want to learn more?
I think the two ways Marisi mentioned, you could certainly go to Vera's webpage, vera.org, to just learn more about our whole institute. But the two ways Marisi mentioned to get in touch with us, I think, are definitely best. And I will say, too, we're very excited about our partnership with Mark. There are 2,300 DAs in the country, only a handful who are really looking at racial disparities, and even a fewer number that are willing to open up all their data and be incredibly transparent in a way to do those. So I want to say that we're also very excited to be doing the work with Mark and folks in the DAP.
Thank you. And I want to thank our KKFI listeners. This has been Radioactive Magazine. I'm your host, Bob Grove.